The Sutra of Golden Light is a Mahayana Sutra. But what exactly is a Sutra? What is a Sutra? So a Sutra, in brief, is a Buddhist scripture. Rather, it's one kind of Buddhist scripture. Perhaps we can say the most important and the most representative kind of Buddhist scripture. Now, what is a scripture? A scripture means simply a writing. A scripture is simply something written down. But the sutras, the Buddhist sutras, and least of all the Mahayana sutras, are not primarily literary documents. They are literary recensions of oral traditions. And it's very important to remember this, very important to understand this, that they are literary recensions of oral traditions. We must never forget that the Buddha himself, the historical Shakyamuni, did not write anything. It's not even certain, and this perhaps should give us great food for thought, it's not even certain, it's not even clear whether he could read and write. He committed nothing to writing. In his day, spiritual teachings were considered far too sacred to be committed to anything as secular as writing. Teaching was always given orally and transmitted orally. So the Buddha too taught orally. He spoke. He conversed. He held discussions. He gave discourses. And people, disciples, remembered what he had said. Sometimes indeed his words were so memorable that the disciples couldn't possibly forget. In a few cases, of course, in the case of some disciples, perhaps they didn't remember, perhaps they did forget. But those who did remember passed on what they remembered, passed on the teaching as they had heard it, as they had understood it, passed it on to their disciples, and they passed it on to theirs. And in this way, the Buddha's teaching was orally transmitted in India for many, many generations. It was even arranged orally and edited orally, and this surely must have been a tremendous feat. The monks, the early disciples, not only remembered hundreds and thousands of teachings, but they arranged the teachings and edited the teachings while they were still being orally transmitted. They even catalogued them, and in some cases they even indexed them orally, without putting pen to paper, without putting stylus to palm leaf even once. It was all done orally. It was all carried in the memory, all carried in the heads of these old monks. Surely, as I've said, this was a tremendous feat. And the whole process, the whole tradition of oral transmission is especially associated with the name of Ananda. Ananda was the cousin of the Buddha, and for the last 20 years of the Buddha's life, Ananda was his constant companion. Wherever the Buddha went, Ananda went. If the Buddha went for alms, well, Ananda went for alms not far behind the Buddha. If the Buddha gave a discourse, Ananda was there listening. If the Buddha accepted an invitation, Ananda was also included. So for 20 years, the Buddha and Ananda were hardly separated for more than a few hours. And Ananda had a remarkably retentive memory. And he remembered everything that the Buddha had said. I used, I must confess, to have my doubts about this, whether Ananda really could, this is a little confession as it were, whether Ananda really could have remembered everything that the Buddha said, and where he said it, and when he said it, and to whom. But luckily for me, some years ago, I met somebody who remembered everything that I said, and could tell me in detail, word for word, what I had said, and where I had said it, and when I had said it, and why I had said it. And he apparently had it all filed away in his mind. So after meeting, after getting to know that person, I lost all my doubts about Ananda and his retentive memory. So Ananda remembered everything that he had heard the Buddha say. And after the Buddha's death, after the Buddha's parinirvana, as we call it, he repeated everything that he had heard, everything that he remembered, at a gathering of monks held in a great cave near Rajagriha, in the state of Magadha, the modern Bihar. This gathering, by the way, this gathering of monks held after the Buddha's parinirvana, is sometimes referred to as the First Council. But it wasn't really a council at all. The word in Sanskrit and Pali is sangiti, which literally means a chanting or a singing, even, together. The monks, and there were supposed to be 500 of them, chanted or sang together what they remembered of the Buddha's teaching, especially what Ananda remembered, what he had contributed to, as it were, the collective memory of the spiritual community. And therefore, almost every sutra, almost every Buddhist scripture begins with the words, "Thus have I heard at one time." And the "I" here is supposed to be Ananda. It is Ananda speaking and saying, "Thus have I heard at one time." He's saying that this is what he once heard the Buddha, the enlightened one, say. He's saying that he had been present. He had heard it all. Or if he had not been present, the Buddha had repeated it all to him afterwards. And these words, at the beginning of a text, at the beginning of a sutra, at the beginning of a scripture, are believed, therefore, to guarantee the authenticity of that sutra, the authenticity of the teaching it contains. "Thus have I heard at one time." Now, I've said that the sutra, or a sutra, is one kind of scripture, one kind of Buddhist scripture. And it's one kind of scripture because it's based on one kind of oral tradition, or one form of oral tradition, oral communication. One kind in respect of form, but not necessarily in respect of content. The Buddha, we know, taught in a variety of ways, in a variety of forms. And even during the period of oral transmission, there was a list drawn up of 9 or 12 ways in which the Buddha taught. 9 or 12 ways or forms which the Dharma, as an oral communication, assumed. And these were later regarded as subdivisions of the canonical literature, the scriptures. But the list is essentially oral in origin.